You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn, Opelika, sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this May 20th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on another beautiful day here in the Auburn and Opelika area. We got our good buddy Tripp Upton in the studio as well, and tons to get to on today's show. The SEC baseball tournament has lived up to the hype, I would say, so far through day one and off and running in day two. We'll talk about that. Plus, Auburn is in action tonight and a whole lot more. Happy Wednesday, Christian.
Happy Wednesday. You got the day right, too, so it must feel like halfway through the week.
I know what today is, unfortunately, with everything else going on with trying to get ready for being out of town for 9 straight days.
Yeah.
I'm fully aware because basically everything has to be done tonight or by the end of tonight, because once tomorrow hits, I'm out of time.
What you truly mean is, you know that it's game day eve, and so nothing else is stressful, but you know the Auburn Tigers play, or I guess the high school Tigers play tomorrow.
Yes, they do, baby.
That's the biggest thing. That's why you know today is Wednesday. But the Auburn University.
Did you know Tigers are bigger than Huskies?
Not always.
I do think always.
I don't know.
If you can find me a Tiger that's smaller than a Husky. A real one, not an AI-generated one.
I don't know. The baby Tigers and full-grown Huskies.
I would still take the Tiger to win. And I'll take the Tigers to win this week, baby.
Play tonight at 1:30 a.m.
Approximately.
It'll be a battle of the Tigers and the Tigers with LSU pulling the upset over Oklahoma.
Nice pick yesterday.
Last night. Yeah, thank you. Made it to where you mentioned it on the broadcast, and you feel like it's just kind of a way of life of, man, don't give a team that doesn't have anything to fight for a thing to fight for. And the announcers last night made a really good point, and I speak on it just about as true as all of the guys would agree that are playing for the Tigers of LSU right now of, man, we just want to go play.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how, doesn't matter where, doesn't matter when. We don't want our season to be done. We want to keep playing baseball. And they understand that they have to win the whole dang tournament if they want to have even a spot in the postseason. And so Auburn is going to be in the paths, but LSU is in the path of Auburn as well. We're going to be able to dive into a lot of what happened yesterday, what's gone already so far today, already one game final, one game, you can see it on the TV right now in front of us with Florida and Vanderbilt. Also some Auburn men's golf news, because my goodness, you want to talk about greatness. You want to talk about a legacy, a dynasty. Auburn Golf may be doing just that. We're also going to get with Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7. Get his thoughts on a lot of football side, or a lot of football things. Maybe some of the rooms that he's really, really excited about. I've heard a lot about that tight end room over the past couple of days and how it looks to be a big-time strength. Also, with Auburn having Big Cat weekend, Georgia had their scavenger hunt weekend. And so was there any big news? I know they missed out on an offensive lineman this morning. And then also kind of looking at their schedule beginning to look towards their football season, and a question of, does Georgia look at their schedule the same way that Auburn does? Of, okay, this is the part that you just have to survive, or is Georgia at the point of, yeah, it doesn't really matter, we're going to go out and mentally beat, before we even step on the field, we're going to take down these teams. Also, Will Wade continuing to be ethical and continuing to make really, really good friends with everybody back in the Southeastern Conference again. I mean, no complaints whatsoever. It's been a very smooth, slow, and steady introduction for him back to Baton Rouge. Not in the headlines yesterday and not in the headlines last night. Yet again, for the exact same reason. We'll be able to dive into all of that in an action-packed, very busy hour number one before Daryl Dapperidge joins us to get started with hour number two.
Yeah, so until we get to those two great guests, you can be a part of the show. If you'd like to give us a call, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Your thoughts on what's going on in Hoover with the SEC baseball tournament. Your thoughts on Auburn taking on LSU for the first time this year, a team that Auburn did not see in the regular season. Does that give you confidence going into this game tonight, win or go home? Does it scare you a little bit? Because again, as Christian said, LSU, a desperate team with basically nothing to lose. And so you can give us a call about that, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And I said it to start the show, day one of the SEC tournament, man, it lived up to what we expect, yes, but also hope from the SEC baseball tournament all the way into last night where, yeah, LSU didn't just win, man. They handed it to Oklahoma last night. And now, as you mentioned as well, Florida up 3-0 about halfway through against Vanderbilt. And this is the result you would expect. But yesterday was awesome in the SEC tournament. It started with Missouri's win over Ole Miss. It had then Vanderbilt team playing right now. The comeback win against Kentucky. Tennessee did what they were supposed to do and just ran all over South Carolina. And then, yeah, LSU putting it on Oklahoma last night.
Yeah, you mentioned today, Aiden King throwing for Florida, which is a little bit of a surprise for me. I know that you just want to do anything you can to make it to that point, but goes to show why Vanderbilt has been blanked so far. One of the best arms in the SEC through that opener against Auburn, where Auburn was defeated. But struggling here to get out of the fifth and may have just given up a two-run double. He did make it 3-2. I think he wants that slider back. Vanderbilt right back into this contest and may have knocked out Aiden King. I guess the off day makes it to where he could throw in that final game if they were to make it to the championship. But questionable in using their arms, the best arms, on day one. But again, it's win or go home for everybody. And makes it even more interesting that LSU and Oklahoma used the arms that they did, because they openly talked about it. We're saving the best arms. We're saving our top guys for the chance to play Auburn now tonight. And so
no way, shocker.
Yeah, no way that you're going to face their aces, because they threw just about everybody in their bullpens, just trying to get outs, trying to get an inning or two from them. But
dude just piped that double, by the way, straight to the Florida logo in the outfield. That's of all awesome. The logos across the outfield wall from left to right, just hit it straight directly into the Florida logo.
Hate it. A two-run shot over right here from Logan Johnstone. He's hit 11 of, or he's hit 10 of them. I wouldn't complain. I'll tip my cap. Here's number 11 right here. 1-0 changeup that's going to miss over the inside part of the plate right into the lefty swing. You ready for it? Instead, the changeup missed outside. Missouri starts it off with a really nice win, an upset win over Ole Miss. They win it 10-8. They did not follow it up by looking very good here this morning, as Mississippi State run rules the Tigers 12-2. We mentioned Vanderbilt taking on Florida right now. Tennessee takes care of South Carolina in a game that you feel like went a little bit under the radar just because of South Carolina. But Tennessee wins it 11-6. They will take on Arkansas after this game, approximately 4:30 Central Time, 5:30 Eastern Time. And then with LSU's win over Oklahoma last night, we mentioned it, taking on Auburn at 8 o'clock, scheduled. I'll believe that when I see it. Weather has thankfully not played too big of a factor yet. I don't know if the weather has changed. If we want to look at our unnamed weather app and our meteorologist, Jacob Goins, no way. Was I a pitch early?
Oh, he missed it by about 4 feet off the right center field wall.
He tied it up with a triple, though.
Yeah, he did.
That would have been cool.
He could have turned and made a bang-bang play for home. That would have been cool.
Trip, that would have been the greatest promo ever.
Speaking of that, Did you see the inside the park grand slam hit last
night? Was it James Wood?
It was James Wood. An inside the park grand slam. Was it the left fielder and center fielder, or the center fielder and the right fielder? I can't remember.
It was the left fielder and the center fielder were running in, and the left fielder caught it, ran into the wall, and the center fielder was standing there ready to hype him up. And the left fielder all of a sudden stood up and started looking and was pointing back behind
the
center fielder.
Yeah, they lost the baseball,
And it rolled all the way to center field. And, James Wood, an inside-the-park grand slam. The last one to happen, I believe it was a couple of years ago, to your Boston Red Sox.
That sounds about right. I was about to say, I don't remember last time we've seen one.
It was Rafaela for the Rays, I believe, at the time. Just skied one into center field. Center fielder charged in and just completely lost it. And it just sat on the warning track and he couldn't get to it.
That's pretty awesome to see a inside-the-park grand slam, especially in the majors, too. It takes a funky play like that.
It's about as wild as two nights ago, Robbie Ray for the Giants gave up a grand slam 6 pitches into his outing.
Holy smokes.
It was the Diamondbacks. It was Nolan Arenado who hit a grand slam 6 pitches into the start.
What, just a couple one-pitch singles and a walk and just...
Not even a walk. I believe it was 3 straight singles. And then, again, it was a 1-0 count to Arenado. And he just sent it over the wall. And Ketel Marte with a walk-off home run that last night as well.
Yeah, well, Vandy right back in it, so we'll keep you updated on that game. But also in the SEC tournament, Mississippi State has officially won social media for the week in Hoover.
Gosh. It's incredible.
Unbelievable stuff from Mississippi State, where Ole Miss, if you missed it yesterday, Ole Miss Baseball put out a graphic. They were the first, the first college baseball team to ever challenge
to use the ABS,
challenge system in college baseball, and it was like,
and we even made a joke about it, like, congrats,
that's a reach, like, all right,
and
whatever.
It was, congrats, you lost,
you were wrong.
You challenged a ball and it was in fact a ball.
So then Mississippi State used a challenge this morning and got it right on their first one ever. So Mississippi State, in the same format, the same style, the same everything, puts out a graphic and says, Mississippi State baseball, first team in college baseball history to correctly get the ABS challenge, or maybe first team in the SEC.
It was the first team from Mississippi.
First team, that's what it was. First team from Mississippi to correctly challenge a pitch in college baseball. And it's like,
well,
round
then,
of applause to you,
tip
man.
Of the cap.
Whoever had that idea was surely they were sitting on that all night, and they were like, please challenge a pitch. Please get it right. I'm so ready.
And the fan base, now you're happy. Just don't give anybody food.
Yeah, don't you dare.
Don't you dare give anybody food, or they will be quite upset.
Well, speaking of the ABS system, somebody texted in about it in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. Again, we're talking
feeling.
SEC baseball here. It says, well, we can now see why the umpires probably didn't want the checking system. 13 out of 15 overturns in the first two games yesterday.
Okay, good. That's not the point that I was going to discuss.
Go ahead, enlighten us.
No, I was going to save it for a little bit later.
Oh, okay.
But, 13 of 15, I mean, it's...
In the first two games yesterday.
And a lot of the ones last night went in favor of the challenger. There were a couple you had back-to-back. LSU challenged, or it was Oklahoma that challenged a 1-2 pitch that was, or a 1-1 pitch that was called a ball, challenge that made it 1-2, and then a strike three. Sorry, it was 3-1, made it 3-2, and then the 3-2 pitch was a called strike, and LSU immediately challenged that one, and so back to back, and both were wrong by the umpire.
Jeez.
And the LSU player walked.
Well, that's what we were talking about yesterday. I wonder how many of these will be bat or at bat changing calls. You know what I mean?
There was directly.
There was one last night with Aaron Judge I saw where he
walked
emphatically to first. Rung up, and he just walked to first and tapped his helmet. He was like, dude, it's not close.
Yeah,
it wasn't. It was a whole baseball and a half low.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Took off the shin guard, took off the elbow guard, handed the bat boy his bat, and was 3/4 down to first watching the screen.
Yeah.
And the pitcher had to make his way back onto the mound and continue the inning.
If you're an umpire, and like this texter said, and this whole new ABS thing, are you happy that the call gets corrected? Like, it's got to be a pride thing to where you get mad about it, right? And you get shown up on national TV or national radio or in the news or what. I mean, you blatantly in front of everybody are told,
you're wrong.
And as soon, and you know that every single time that it happens, if you call a strike and it's a ball, cameras immediately pan to you, putting back on the face mask. And you've heard the ones of, I believe it was in spring training, of the Cincinnati Reds are challenging the ball call or challenging the strike call, and he forgot to turn off his mic, and it's, please be a strike. Oh,
I do remember that.
Everybody's sitting there.
I do remember
that. Was making jokes about that. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a pride thing. And by no means you have to hope that at this point, and maybe not for SEC umpires, but you have to hope in MLB situations that it's not a personal thing and you don't have to sit there and, okay, I got this one right. You didn't. Or the catcher goes, yeah,
right.
I got it right. You didn't. It's just a job.
You got to change your mentality if you're a home plate umpire. Like, you've got to make your call and be confident in it.
Yeah.
But if they challenge and it gets overturned, who cares?
Yeah.
It's one pitch.
And
right?
You
got to move on.
And you have to not let a pitch like that later in the inning, later in the game, make you hesitate. If you're wrong twice, you're wrong twice. But by no means can you let a same pitch like that be called differently a couple of batters or a couple of innings later, because that's when true frustrations begin to build.
Which is why I think if we're going to use it, I think you should just be ABS every single pitch. I don't think you should have to challenge it personally. And I think that I think we will get there at some point. So,
unfortunately, agree, because it's the comparison that I've made over the past year or so when this was beginning to work its way into fruition of, okay, you get three challenges, but after that are two challenges, and if you get them wrong, you get them wrong. Just wait until somebody strikes out with runners on second and third in the bottom of the ninth inning with a 5-4 type of game in the NLCS or the NLDS, and somebody gets rung up, and it's like, okay, why am I not able to challenge a pitch that was called incorrectly because of some other ones that were not challenged or were challenged incorrectly innings before?
Why
am I the one that gets screwed over? But it will, same thing in everything with sports. It will take a moment like that for there to be any sort of change. And the people that are making those decisions just pray that it's a decade and a half from now when that situation works its way to the forefront.
Well, there's been a lot of drama with the ABS in Hoover. A lot of good news, though, and I think good vibes from it. Good news is, though, besides that, the games have been good. And I'm glad that when we are done with Hoover, I have a feeling ABS will not be the only thing we're talking about. And I'm happy. I feel like that's what we're doing for day one, right? We're talking about the results and we're talking about the ABS stuff, right?
Meaning, yes, once the tournament's done, it's not, ABS is not the leading force of conversation.
Yeah. And I think today will be no different. Tie ball game, Vandy and Florida, 3-3, heading to the bottom of the fifth. Florida due up with 2-3-4 there in Hoover. But we will continue talking Auburn baseball and SEC baseball, because the Tigers play tonight. We'll talk about that, a quick preview of that, plus some other Auburn Athletics news as well. A team going back to the national championship. We'll talk about that before Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joins us. All that here as we're just underway here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
This is Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. July 4th, 1776. Inside Philadelphia's Pennsylvania State House, 56 men prepared to sign a document unlike any the world had ever seen. A declaration that 13 small colonies would break away from the most powerful empire on earth. If they failed, it would be treason, punishable by death. John Hancock signed first, boldly. Then the others followed. Farmers, merchants, lawyers. Ordinary men risking everything. Their words, radical for the time. That all men are created equal. Now, 2.5 centuries later, that idea still echoes. One defining moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island. Family owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking more Auburn baseball, SEC baseball. But before we do want to shout out Auburn men's golf going back to the NCAA championships for the fifth year in a row. In a tournament that they were just playing in that did not start all that great, and they found a way because that team is just loaded and they have one of the greatest young players in the nation, Jackson Koivin. Oh, see you, ball. Is that a two-run shot?
Yeah.
Ooh, Florida back on top, 5-3. That was cute, Vanderbilt. Florida's better than you. What?
Cameraman just did what cameramans do.
Ah, tip of the cap to you, sir. I missed it, but I know what you did. Yeah, how about Auburn men's golf? 5 years in a row, they've now advanced to the NCAA championships.
Absolutely insane. 2022 through 2026 now. Also made it from 2012 to 2019. There was not a tournament in 2020, and they missed out in 2021. But that is, for those counting, 13 of the past 14 tournaments, Auburn has had their name. Auburn has had their logo in the NCAA championships. And when you want to talk about a dynasty, you want to talk about, I mean, players coming in and being developed and being able to use the argument of look at what we've been able to do. You talk about proof of concept. What more do you need than that right there? Much less even in a day like yesterday where some of the Auburn players struggled and the names that you don't hear as much of were able to carry Auburn until they really got it rolling. It's the fact of, man, even the third, the fourth, or the fifth types of guys in terms of where you rank them are good enough to go and compete with just about everybody and can win so many tournaments. It goes to show you how good, how solid this team is and the potential as far as they want to go, just because of the talent is, it's absurd. When you go and you look at the numbers, I mean, Tripp and I joked about it a couple of weeks ago. You can go to like auburntigers.com/Koivin. And there's just a list of accolades for his name.
Yeah,
and it shows every single thing. It shows the amount of rounds under par. It shows his wins. It shows how many birdies, how many eagles. And it's like, yeah, find me another place that has something like that.
I'm not ready for him to leave Auburn, but I am so excited to cheer for him when he's on tour. Like, that is going to be so much fun. And you feel like the stage will not be too big for him, right? The lights will not be too bright. That's a guy that has been dominating college golf, him and several others around the nation. But, man, I'm super excited to watch him play on the PGA Tour, and I hope he takes it by storm. I hope he can kind of be on the back end of this new wave of golfers that's coming through the PGA right now, and I hope that he can be looped in, because you got to think, man, yeah, you've got the guys that are in their prime, like Scotty and them. Rory, even though he's still winning, he's on the back end of his. Guys like Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas haven't won in forever. So that wave is on its way out. And guys like Jackson Koivin absolutely could be the face of the PGA Tour in the next 5 years.
Yeah, auburntigers.com/Koivin. And it just shows everything. It's got a picture of him, and it shows every single one of his career stats.
That's incredible. That's awesome. And golf, you know, one of those things, obviously, where you don't have to display that for a team to draft you and, you know,
right,
and tell them why they should choose you. Like, that, you don't really think about that in golf, but you just go.
And not that I need to sit here and tell everybody how good he is, but he has 11 wins, which is first in Auburn history. He has 32 top 10 finishes, which is first in Auburn history. He averages a 68.84 scoring average, which is first in Auburn history. He has 81 rounds below par, which is first in Auburn history. He has 503 total birdies, which is sixth, in Auburn history. He is 11-3-1 in match play. And then in this season alone, 6 wins, 10 top 10 finishes, averaging just about a 68 every single time he steps onto a golf course. What I would give to feel that once.
I mean, that's what Jacob Hillman does.
Yeah, so. I mean, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't necessarily complain because I'll shoot a 68 and I only have holes 17 and 18 left to play. But
true.
Sometimes it's worse than that. 25 rounds below par, has 167 birdies so far this year. And, I mean, you're looking at one of the greatest Auburn athletes, if not collegiate athletes, that's anybody's ever going
to
see.
You got to start having discussions of putting Jackson Koivin on the Auburn Mount Rushmore.
Isn't that wild to
you
think
really
about?
Do. I mean, it's him, Suni Lee, right? You talk about non-football.
Yeah, non-power three.
Or yeah, just non-power three. I mean, Koivin and Suni Lee are up there instantly.
Yeah, DeJuana Bonner as well. I mean, you feel like she goes up in that conversation. I mean, this is
pretty
something that is something you have not seen. And again, the fact that there are numbers out there that show that Jackson Koivun is a top 45 golfer in the world right now, not at the college level,
in the world.
Amongst names,
yeah,
amongst every single man who has a driver and a putter in his bag.
Yeah, he is. He's awesome. Auburn men's golf is awesome, and congratulations to them. Excited to cover that over the next several weeks. But we have just a couple of minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 is going to join us. Christian wants to ask about a couple of the position rooms for Georgia football. Plus, we'll get some insight on what happened with a big recruiting weekend in Athens and start diving into that football schedule for Georgia as we are counting down the days now to the start of the football season. But quickly, and we'll talk more about this in the second hour, but Auburn baseball in action tonight. First game in Hoover scheduled for 8 o'clock. I don't really know exactly where we are in terms of the games right now. I don't know how behind they are.
What are we, top four? No,
this is top six. No, bottom five. This is still bottom five.
If that's the case, then, I mean, you're actually,
I think we're okay,
decently on schedule, because this was a 1 o'clock start. That being said, I'm sure this will end up being a 12 to 8 type of game, just because,
yeah,
why not?
Right.
But I don't know.
Auburn's scheduled for an 8 o'clock start against LSU tonight. Quickly on the thing that we proposed earlier, good or bad thing that Auburn didn't play LSU in the regular season? For tonight's game, obviously.
Weirdly enough, indifferent. I mean, I feel like you're at the point right now of it's not necessarily a familiar factor. It's more so just an execution factor. LSU obviously coming off a very big win. So from that aspect, if you haven't seen them, you don't necessarily know the arms or have seen their arms to go back and study. But there's so much scouting on everybody of, okay, this is what he throws to lefty hitters. This is what he throws to righties. I don't necessarily mind it, and from that aspect, they haven't seen our pitching either.
Somebody in the text box made a good point. Again, that's open, by the way. 334-784-1067 is the number to send your thoughts to. They mentioned game one being a run rule helps to keep things on track.
Very, very much so.
He said, So unless there's rain, you're doing okay. They also said it's pouring in South Auburn right now. So, I don't know. I don't see that here, but it might be on its way. I don't know. But as long as it doesn't rain in Oxford or Jacksonville State over the next couple of days, I don't care.
But yeah, really,
after that, it can rain for the next 2 months. Just get me through the state championship and then get me to Orlando.
I heard it's raining in Turks and Caicos, so it's really unfortunate.
I don't care. You know where it's not raining? The casino on that boat. Not raining in there, buddy.
Hopefully it's raining
chips. Yes. Yeah, love it. Okay, that's enough of that. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joins us next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes in to the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Appreciate you being with us. We got Tripp Upton in the studio as well. And we head to the phone lines as we do every single Wednesday at 2:30. And we talk to our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Jordan, we appreciate you hopping on. As always, my friend, I know we are basically in, if not on the verge of full-on talking season, which we will get into in terms of scheduling and things. But I hope all is well for you and your world, my friend.
Yeah, doing great. I appreciate y'all having me back on. And yeah, we got enough, football, basketball stuff going on. But hey, women's tennis, I know Auburn was right there too. Men's golf, Auburn was in Athens, so a lot of fun stuff. Enough for us to talk about, that's for sure.
Yeah, you were able to go and take some of that in, right, in person with everything going on there?
Yeah, I checked out women's tennis. I got to see a chunk of the championship match against Texas A&M. The weather kind of threw us for a loop.
Yeah.
It got delayed, but very fun. I would encourage folks, one, if you get a chance to go to NCAAs like that, do it. But even going to the Auburn matches at home, it was a very fun experience, and couldn't couldn't speak highly enough about what I got to see.
Well, there's a ton going on with Georgia athletics, and we know that you are not the go-to recruiting guy. You cover more of the team events and the games and the roster and things like that. But this past weekend, it was the long-running tradition of the scavenger hunt there in Athens for Georgia football. Are there any notes or anything that you know of from that in terms of Georgia recruiting or kind of how the success of that event went? Because Auburn had their own, of course, with Big Cat Weekend.
Yeah, I don't think it was quite as productive immediately for Georgia as it was for Auburn. Georgia didn't get any new commits in the aftermath of what they call Scavenger Hunt Weekend, but some good stuff, and I want to give a shout-out to Ben Wolk and Kip Adams, both on our staff. They did a very good job of covering the event and talking to some of the guys who were there. And to me, what I want to see really these next couple weeks, if we get a better picture of their wide receiver board, that's sort of been a question. Even more so in the past couple of weeks, they lost one of their commits, Aiden Starling. He decommitted. But they had some guys on campus, Eric McFarland from IMG Academy, Namjay Thompson, a receiver they're really excited about, Amari Patterson. And it seems like from what we've heard, the returns on what they got to see in Athens are very positive. So I think this is a year they'd like to take three, maybe even four wide receivers. Right now, they do not have a receiver commit in the 2027 class, but I think they timed that very well, getting those guys on campus, trying to really show them what it would mean to be a Bulldog, kind of sell them on the future. Like I said, no commits quite yet out of Scavenger Hunt Weekend, but really watching receivers specifically if any of those guys were to pop in the coming weeks.
The receiver room, one that has questions, as you mentioned, for the future, but was able to read a little bit of your article that you had written yesterday or maybe the day before, talking about the tight end room and how that is looking to be a major strength for this year and obviously with all of the upcoming years as well. But talk about either that room and then maybe a couple others that you are really, really excited for this upcoming year with Kirby Smart and that offense for the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah, I think you have to start with tight end. I mean, it is just a room. I think even if you were to cut off the top couple names, Georgia would be in really good shape. I mean, Lawson Lucky, Elias Williams, Ethan Barbour. They've got Caden Prothro coming in, who set a lot of records at Bowdoin High School in Georgia. And they've also got Jaden Riddell. Jaden was a guy, he's going into his third year. I kind of wondered this offseason if he might look to portal, try to get somewhere else with more playing time. He stayed, and man, he made the most of it, had a very productive spring. And mentioned those guys, Colton Heinrich, who is also in Jaden Riddell's class. He made a fantastic one-handed catch at G-Day. He's trying to get involved. Then you say all that, and you throw in three freshmen, including Caden Prothro, who I mentioned. So they've got to make the most of that receiver room. Felt like last year, Gunner, just for whatever reason, did not maximize them in the passing game. Which was, a bit of a disappointment because of how good Oscar Delp is. You know, he's playing in New Orleans now. So to see if you can take advantage of that. Other positions, I mean, I feel like pretty much every year you can just etch in stone tight end and inside linebacker, and it's no different with inside linebacker this year. Raylan Wilson is back for another year. Thought he had a chance to go pro if he wanted to, but I think that was a big win for Georgia to get him back. Got Chris Cole, who has been their most consistent pass rusher. Justin Williams, who once upon a time was the number one linebacker in the country coming out of high school. You've also got Zayden Walker, who really came on as a pass rusher last year, A.J. Crua, and then three freshmen there as well. Besides those two positions, I would say the defensive line is one that I think that maybe folks don't really understand and probably won't see or really come to understand until they see it in action this year, and they got a really good – they're in a good spot because of their depth. I think you talk about Gabe Harris, you talk about Elijah Griffin, you talk about Xavier McLeod, Jordan Hall. They're in a really good spot when it comes to depth. And when I think about Georgia's best teams, you look at how good the defensive line was and what made those defensive lines so good. I was actually looking at the 2021 defensive line, how deep it was, and having – the ability to rotate guys in and try to keep those top starters fresh. I don't know that this is a line where a Jalen Carter-like guy is not starting, but I think that they've got good depth and they feel good about the options for guys who aren't technically a starter when you look at, you know, the participation in any given game.
Jordan, go ahead.
We got our guy Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 here with us on the phone lines. And just following up with the tight end question, and even again the defensive line as well, we live in such a world of the how much can you pay me, how much can you play me. And so how does Georgia go about using their guys in the NFL as kind of like a positive pipeline of being able to recruit guys like that? I mean, when you're looking at just the tight end room, everybody knows of Brock Bowers. You mentioned Oscar Delp. And then the plethora of guys on the defensive side of the football, whether that's the linebacker room, whether that's the defensive line, even the DBs. How does Georgia go about using that to try and help recruits in an age that just feels like it's so difficult to not only get guys, but to get that depth as well, which you mentioned?
I think they do a very good job of really selling development. And, you know, when I talk about NIL at Georgia, I always want to make sure – I don't want to make it sound like Georgia does not pay these guys at all. And that, you know, everybody at Georgia is not getting a dime and that they're playing for the love of the game. But this is – we're not talking about the, like a $50 million roster. Georgia
right.
is not one of those kind of teams that just spends an insane amount of money. But what they try to do while, again, taking care of their players, making sure they are making some money while they're at Georgia – they sell the future. You know, they sell, hey, if you come to Georgia, if you do what we tell you and if you follow our path, you're going to be playing in the NFL. And you know, the track record speaks for itself. And it's helped them in the past hold on to guys at least for another year who were thinking about transferring. Julio Humphrey, a cornerback, and Daniel Harris the next year, another cornerback. They had thought about transferring, you know, had either gone in the portal or, you know, posted on social media that they were going to enter the portal, and Georgia convinced them to stay and say, look, you know, we know you want to play more. You can come in here and try to play and fight for more playing time. But even if you're not playing, the opportunity you're going to get in practice, even as someone number two on the depth chart, it's going to get you ready if you want to play in the NFL. So I think it's so much easier for Georgia. It's one thing to be able to say that and say, hey, just stay patient. You know, you will get your opportunity. But when you can point to draft class after draft class after draft class, the goal for everybody wants to make money right now. The number one goal for the majority of these guys, I want to play in the NFL one day. And Georgia's got that track record. And I think more often than not, especially if you decide you're coming to Georgia, that development and that chance to play in the NFL means a whole lot to you.
Jordan Hill does such a good job of covering Georgia football and laying out the roster. He clearly knows it in and out, and we're here at the end of May. I don't think you're giving Auburn fans a lot of confidence, though, in Georgia taking a step back anytime soon, though, my friend.
Yeah, I don't know that that's going to happen. I will say this, and not looking at the schedule right now, I am kind of intrigued by that Auburn-Georgia game this year. One, because, you know, just seeing what this looks like in Alex Golish's first year. But if I'm remembering correctly, Auburn plays at Georgia the week after Georgia plays at Alabama. Mm,
that is correct. Yep.
Yeah. You know, if it was in Jordan-Hare, I might, you know, be more like, hey, you know, this could be a trap game kind of situation. But if you're Auburn knowing you've got to play Georgia at some point, you know, I think getting them after they've gone to Bryant-Denny where, one, you know, either they continue having their struggles against Alabama, especially when it comes to playing the regular season, playing in Tuscaloosa, or two, you know, Georgia finally breaks through and beats them in Tuscaloosa. You know, you could get a Georgia team that's kind of, you know, riding high after you know, beating what's been, you know, a true thorn in its side for the better part of, you know, last decade.
Yeah, and we would love to sit here after that scenario. Let's say Georgia were to win against Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Auburn fans would love to sit here and say, oh, yeah, here we go. Letdown game, right? They're going to ride the high and not be prepared properly and yada, yada. Yeah, we're still talking about a Kirby Smart coached football team. That's not going to happen. But I'm glad you bring up the schedule because that's the next direction we want to go. Again, Jordan Hill, Dogs 247 with us on the phone lines here on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn, where this schedule is unique, I think. I can't determine, Jordan, if it's difficult, if it's easy, or just somewhere in between. I'll read it for folks who probably don't have it in front of them. Tennessee State to open up. Western Kentucky as well. They open up, do the Dogs. SEC play on the road at Arkansas in week three, which, you know, could get a little funky maybe. Then you host Oklahoma in Athens. You host Vanderbilt in Athens before going to Alabama, like we mentioned, hosting Auburn on October 17th, and then you you have a bye. You then play Florida in Atlanta, right? That game in Mercedes-Benz this year because they sold it off like Auburn did with Baylor. You go on the road to Ole Miss, host Missouri at South Carolina, and then hosting Georgia Tech in Athens. How would you describe that schedule in terms of its difficulty, in terms of getting big-time wins and making the college football playoff?
I would probably call it manageable. I don't know that it's necessarily easy because you are talking about playoff teams like Oklahoma, Alabama, Ole Miss. I mean, but, you know, I think the way it's kind of spread out certainly helps. I mean, you know, listening to it again, I think about that stretch of hosting Oklahoma, you know, hosting Vanderbilt, playing at Alabama. It seems like a very important stretch to me when it comes to sort of figuring out where this Georgia team is. It's a Georgia team that I'm convinced this defense is going to be very, very good. And with the offense, I think it goes as far as Gunnar Stockton will take it. I think there's a lot of potential there. But you know, even besides that stretch that I just pointed out, the stretch of, you know, playing, hosting Auburn, again, not really knowing what they're going to be in Golish's first year, you know, then the bye week, and then playing Florida in Atlanta, and then playing at Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. That Ole Miss team, when I look at this entire schedule for Georgia, that's sort of like the unknown to me. I still think they're going to be very good with Trinidad Chambliss, but I mean, there are pieces that moved on. Not having Lane Kiffin, that's certainly significant. There, Georgia has to handle, and you know, we were talking about, you know, you can't say that a Kirby Smart team will overlook an opponent. You know, one of his favorite things to say is humility is a week away. And living in the SEC right now, again, I think we are taking for granted this is about to be the first 9-game SEC schedule for everybody. It's going to be an adjustment for everybody. Just super fascinated to see how Georgia handles it, especially if I'm remembering correctly, there's only one bye week this year.
Correct.
That is going to complicate things, I think, for everybody.
The second schedule that you mentioned, the last 3 weeks of October and then that first week of November, at least when I was doing my research, I considered to be the toughest, or at least the wackiest parts. Again, with all of the unknowns, all of the question marks, which you just alluded to with Golish, and then again with Golding and going on the road a couple of times in that stretch as well. And it's funny how this question being phrased has changed over the past couple of years, going from the 4-team playoff to the 12-team. And now whatever the heck it looks like for the future. Do Georgia fans look at the schedule the same way that Auburn fans do, and the way that a bunch of teams do, just in terms of, okay, if you can survive this part of the schedule and then you get wins here and here, it sets you up for 8, 9, 10 wins and a college football playoff bid? Or is Georgia at the point, since they've seen the mountaintop, of even just that mindset of, okay, this is the part you just need to survive. You can afford a loss. Is that considered one of those weak mentalities?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a situation with Georgia fans where they are sort of expecting at least 10 wins pretty much every year, no matter what they're losing. And it's a credit to what Kirby Smart, what the staff have done. And yeah, it will be interesting with this schedule. I think it's got the right mix of really tough competition along with some easy games. I mean, the non-conference, you've got Georgia Tech every year, and I think Georgia Tech will be pretty good. They are replacing some big names, probably none bigger for Tech than Haynes King, because he did such a good job playing quarterback for them. But, you know, non-conference besides that, we're talking about Tennessee State, Western Kentucky, nothing, you know, too difficult there. And then, you know, the first SEC game at Arkansas, I mean, being on the road is something, but it feels like Silverfield's really starting over, and I kind of think this might be a rough first year there in Fayetteville. So I think that, you know, I haven't looked at any of the Vegas totals here lately, but I think 10-2 is a fair number. I think that Georgia could flirt with going undefeated, but I'm sort of at the point with the SEC, even the best teams, I don't know that we're seeing undefeated teams anymore. So yeah. Looking at it the way I have, I think they go 11-1. You know, maybe they drop to 10-2, but even if, think 10-2, you know, if they're right around there, they'll be safely in the playoff and trying to fight and try to make a little bit more noise. They've been one and done in the playoff the past 2 years, and I know, you know, those two national championships mean a lot to Georgia fans, but they want to make it, you know, and take it a step further. They're hoping they'll do that in 2026.
Well, Vegas is right on par with you, my man. 9.5 is what Georgia's win total is currently for the upcoming 2026 season. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Man, we always appreciate your time. I know, again, in terms of the actual news, there isn't as much, and as we have for years now. We're going to kind of go periodically with you throughout the summer. Still want to bring you on several times and get some updates and talk more schedule and talk more roster and things like that. But we are going to talk to you in a couple of weeks now here on the show, same day, same time. And so until then, plug it all. Tell people where they can find you and how they can take in all your fantastic content.
Definitely. Dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at Dogs247. Sign up, get a 50% off sale. I always encourage folks, hey, if you're an Auburn fan, listen to this, go check out Auburn Undercover. They're running the same deal. My guy Christian Clemente was in town this week with Auburn Golf playing, and I believe Auburn Golf has moved on.
Yep.
As they continue to make the chase for a national title. So I'd encourage everybody to check out Auburn Undercover. And yeah, if you want to follow along with the SEC baseball tournament, at least as far as Georgia goes, Olivia Sayer does a fantastic job for us. She'll have that handled for us. Georgia will play on Thursday about 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central. They will be playing Mississippi State. Georgia is the one seed in that tournament. And shout out to the Junkyard Dogcast, our podcast. We do that once a week. Lots of good stuff and plenty to talk about. And yeah, rolling right on through this summer. And before you know it, man, we'll be talking about media days down in Tampa.
Yeah, you're right about that. Well, man, again, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks coming up on June 3rd. We'll kind of dive into some more stuff that's going on for Georgia athletics as well, man. We appreciate it, man. And enjoy a couple of weeks, and we'll talk to you on June 3rd.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Check him out again, Dogs247.com. Those guys do an incredible job covering all things Georgia athletics. We will take a break, come back, and wrap up hour number one right after this.
This is Ian Fitzsimmons from ESPN Radio, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 for joining us, as he does every single Wednesday at 2:30. And as we mentioned, going to, and we've done this every year at, it's not personal to him. Going to scale back having him on throughout the summer, again, when there's not as much to talk about. Could we cook up some conversations and things? Absolutely. But we also want him to have a life on Wednesdays and not, you know, have to sit around when he's at the beach or on vacation or just not doing anything, if that's what he chooses to do, and wait for the phone to ring at 2:30. So he's been a great guest for a long time. And yeah, so we'll have him on periodically throughout the summer and just get the latest updates. And as he mentioned, once we get closer to SEC Media Days, of course, have him on and talk to him at SEC Media Days. Always cool to have so many of our over-the-phone guests on in person. So really looking forward to all of that, and also looking forward to Double D Wednesday coming back, as Darryl Dapperich will be with us yet again this week, coming up at 3:05. So stick around about 10 minutes. We'll have that for you here on ESPN. And my goodness, we have a ton to talk about with him. 15 minutes won't be enough, so we're going to have to pick and choose what we talk about with him. I'm sure he has comments, though, on Will Wade and LSU adding their second professional basketball player last night. I guarantee he has thoughts, and I'm sure his words are very unique when it comes to Will Wade.
Very calm, very subdued.
Choice words.
Not really known for firing people up or ranting. No. I mean, it feels like it's been so long, because I feel like even you've talked to him once when I had baseball or something, because, man, it feels like I could sit there and ask him questions about the NIT, and that would be the most recent time that that I've talked with him. And so really, really excited to catch up with him again here in a minute.
I'm going to go ahead and place my bet now that he will make a joke about, well, Auburn should just go out and sign, you know, LeBron James, or Auburn should just go sign Shai Gilgeous-Alexander if we're going to do that.
I mean, LeBron's playing with Bronny. Just go play with Bryce at Arizona.
Yeah, yeah.
He has eligibility.
What is eligibility anymore?
Sorry, he wants to go play so he can.
We say he can play, and there's nothing you can do about it. I'm sure Daryl has thoughts. We'll talk to him about that. Plus Auburn baseball, we're talking a lot of that in hour number two as well, as the Tigers hopefully get started in the SEC tournament tonight against the LSU Tigers. All that coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a sunny but drizzly. It is starting to drizzle a little bit outside on this Wednesday. So hope you're doing well as we get underway in the second hour of today's show. If you missed any of the first hour, we did a recap from Hoover Day 1 in the SEC Baseball Tournament. Day 2 is well underway. Also talked about more ABS stuff with the growing positivity from the ABS system. Also talked a little Auburn men's golf as they punched their ticket to the NCAA championships for the fifth year in a row. And then we talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 about all things Georgia athletics. A lot of football talk in there. A couple of position rooms that he's excited about. Plus the recruiting update from a big weekend and taking a deep dive into the schedule. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, be sure to go and check it out on the podcast version of the show, as you can do every single day at ESPNAU.com.
So glad the rain is coming to take away the humidity that's just been such a bad part of Alabama over the past couple of days. So really excited that that's working its way to just clear the air and make it even more enjoyable outside over the next couple of days. Here in hour number two, we're going to break down Auburn and LSU. We're going to tell you a lot about the Tigers and the Tigers, but dive into some of the numbers about the other Tigers. Those are the Bayou Bengals, of what they have done all season long, the frustrations that they have dealt with. Yet, despite a lot of the numbers not going in their favor, there are quite a few that are still in their favor, despite them feeling as if they need to win the entire tournament in Hoover to make it to a spot in the postseason. Also, some other news with LSU in there as well about signing another professional player. But we start hour number two the best way that we know how. Really, really excited to get this guy back onto the phone lines, and no way at all that he is fired up about anything going on in the world of college athletics. We got our guy, Daryl Dapper,
Double D,
host of Locked on Auburn and the Barn. My goodness. Welcome back, sir.
Long
it's been
time
too long.
No talk, man.
Yeah.
Long time no talk. I missed you guys. Great to be back on with you.
Well, man, we have so much to get to, and I know we have a short time to do it. I mean, between the latest football news for Auburn as they are getting some big recruits, just had Big Cat Weekend, Auburn basketball's roster being finalized, and then, of course, Auburn baseball in the SEC tournament, the NCAA tournament, and all the other news around college athletics. What's on your heart today, Double D? What's getting you fired up on this Wednesday?
I can't help but be in baseball mode.
I
just am. And I think, you know, let's be really honest. You know, Auburn's had a tough fall and winter when it comes to sports. I think they underachieved in both seasons when it came to football, basketball, and some of the other things that were going on. And spring has brought about some redemption with the spring sports, golf, tennis, baseball being the way it is with their RPI. So I'm a seasonal kind of guy. I always have been. That's why I never got the whole, and I'm not trying to throw shade at people that do this, but I never got the whole specialized in one sport thing. You know, to play one sport year-round would have driven me nuts. I liked when it was football season, playing football. And so I like that, and I think I'm in baseball mode right now, and I love this team. I know that the Georgia series was a little bit of disappointment, but Auburn won on aggregate. They scored more runs than Georgia in the whole series. I think they made a big statement with the Saturday game, and I think they did enough to secure a top eight finish and be a national host all the way through any super regional. So I'm really liking where this team is right now. I like the pitching staff. I like they basically have a four-man rotation,
yeah,
which is a big advantage if you get into an if game. And I'd like to see them. I know that there's a lot of people that say the SEC tournament doesn't matter. You'd rather rest players, have them healthy for the regional. But if Auburn's hosting a regional and they have that four-man rotation, they are at an advantage where they can go deep into a tournament. And I'd really, really like to see them do some damage in this SEC baseball tournament because it's been a long time since they have.
Well, Darryl, and you're at the point right now of you're almost at a normal spot for a week. I know that Marciano going tonight is a day early, but rather than giving your guys, 12, 13 days off, you're almost at that point of their normal throwing day to where it keeps you in a rotation for when the regionals and or the super regionals get here, you still feel like you're in a perfect spot.
Yeah, that's why I think they went with this. I thought there might have been the urge to throw Sanders tonight. I mean, that's what I'm talking about, having a four-man rotation.
Right.
You know, Jackson Sanders was in the rotation early in the year. Alvarez was your midweek starter. I would have probably been tempted to throw Sanders in this lower-seeded team with LSU, and then you go, Marciano, Alvarez, Petrovic, just like you normally do, and start on 5 days rest. And, this tournament gets over on Sunday. I think the regional starts on Thursday. You'd be okay. Mm-hmm. You'd be fine. You'd have your starters going a week out. But I think they want to keep things as uniform and as natural as possible. I think, again, if you're in a scenario where you have an if game, you've got Sanders. And if you've got to, let's say you get in a situation, guys, where you get three runs down early in a game and you look and your starter just doesn't have it, Jackson looks like he's a guy that can stretch it out.
Yeah,
he can go six, seven innings. Same with Cormier. The job that Cormier did against Georgia in a 9-7 loss that saved that bullpen, and you come back and smoke Georgia the next day where you didn't have to use your bullpen, I think really, really helps Auburn in this SEC tournament as well. And, you go 4 or 5 innings and you keep the game at bay and only give up one run, that's a phenomenal pitching job. And both Jackson and Cormier have done that, and I think that's why it sets them up well for not only the SEC tournament, but getting into the regional.
And those are things that fans don't talk about, and to be honest, even the media doesn't talk about as much, but those are internal conversations from Auburn
some
baseball.
Some media doesn't talk about it.
That's right. You're right about that. And Coach Tiefert and Butch, they have those conversations, and they know just how big it is. Darryl Dappert, Double D, with us on the phone lines for Double D Wednesday. Not that betting odds are everything, but it just gives an idea of what people are thinking. Auburn tied for the 5th best odds to win the national championship, Auburn baseball, that is, Darryl. UCLA in first, Georgia Tech second, Texas third, North Carolina fourth, then Mississippi State, Georgia, and Auburn. All three have the same odds to win the national title.
I look at conferences and conference opponents, and I'm just not a big believer in the Big Ten in baseball. I mean, I'm just not. I have followed college baseball since the late 70s. And I know UCLA and USC and Oregon are now in the Big Ten, and they used to be in the Pac-10, which was the premier conference in baseball until the SEC took over and was that way in the 2000s. I'm not sold on UCLA. I'm just not. I was when they had Trevor Bauer and Garrett Cole and that team, but I'm just not sold that schedule is completely different than what Auburn, Georgia, and Texas and these other teams have to play. Now, the ACC is playing good baseball and has for a while with North Carolina, Georgia Tech, Florida State. But look what Auburn's done, not only in their conference schedule, look at the non-conference. I mean, one of the best, I just kind of threw shade on the Big Ten, but one of the big best teams in the Big Ten is Nebraska.
Nebraska, yep.
Yep.
And Auburn took two or three from Nebraska. So, you know, I don't know if it's just a bias I have because it, growing up, Northern baseball and Big Ten baseball, it was just they didn't start playing until March because of the weather. It was a different era then. They didn't play the amount of games that teams in the South and the West and the ACC played. I'm just not sold on UCLA's schedule, and I'm not sold on the Big 12. I think it's been very weak this year in baseball. So the ACC and the SEC, I think, are your premier. Is Oregon State still in that? I guess Oregon State's still in the Pac-12, whatever that watered-down Pac-12 is.
Yeah,
they're really good.
In baseball, I guess they're technically an independent right now.
Yeah, they're good. They're a good baseball team, which is funny because they didn't even have a program when I was growing up in the Pac-10. They did not. Oregon State and Oregon did not have a baseball program.
How about that?
When Arizona State and Arizona and all those teams were really good, USC with Mark McGwire.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was just one of those situations. I remember going to a game, some kind of tournament, where John Elway and Mark McGwire were playing in a baseball game. It was incredible. You know, Elway playing center field and McGwire hit bombs and Barry Bonds playing for Arizona State. So that's kind of what I think of college baseball. And the SEC has surpassed that and has some really good players. I think that the SEC and the ACC, you're going to have tremendous advantages in these regionals and super regionals because of the schedules they've played.
Well, when you look at just the quad system, I mean, I know that basketball that determines a lot of that, but baseball now getting to that point as well. Auburn, according to a couple different sites in terms of RPI, is 15-15 in quad one games. Nobody has come even close to matching that total. You mentioned UCLA, who's 12-1 in quad one games, but I'll take 13 games played over 30. And then the non-conference schedule, which you mentioned, Auburn's number one in non-conference RPI, number 12 and non-conference strength of schedule. They're number one in overall strength of schedule. And so just to be even at the point of conversation of Auburn went 17-13 in SEC play. They're 36-18 in third in RPI with that kind of schedule. I feel like that goes to show you the road, although it has been bumpy at times. You're battle tested. You're proven for a deep postseason run.
How I usually measure things, that's great that UCLA, like you said, is 12-1, 13-1. In quad ones. I get that. But how I usually use things as a litmus test is, what would UCLA do if they were in the SEC? if weekend in and weekend out, they had to play Texas, Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, some of these teams that really, you know, had great years, where you do have to use more pitching. You do have to get into your bullpen. These guys, you know, SEC teams are a little more apt to face elite pitching night in, night out. What happens then? Who does UCLA play in their midweek games compared to who Auburn and some of these SEC schools have to play in these midweek games? I mean, Auburn's playing Georgia Tech twice a year,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you know, and that number two team in the country. So I think UCLA will get out of their region and they'll probably get out of their super regional because of how it'll be crafted. But College World Series will be the true tale, and I think you're going to see the College World Series loaded with ACC and SEC teams, and I think it'll come to fruition at that point.
Lots to be excited about with Auburn baseball, college baseball. Again, the Tigers supposed to play tonight at 8 o'clock against LSU. We're hoping they do get that game in. Hopefully weather does not impact what's happening in Hoover. We're talking to Darrell Dapprich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn. And while we have you for a couple of more minutes, my man, recruiting for high school football in Auburn here at least, starting to ramp up. Tigers have picked up a couple of big names because of Big Cat Weekend, and that has to make Auburn fans excited.
Well, I think anybody that doesn't think high school recruiting doesn't matter, just watch what happens when you start getting a top 15, top 20 class again. I think, just like anything else, it doesn't have to be absolute. I think there could be a nice hybrid, a meshing of the two. And Auburn went into May kind of struggling, and I remember being on the show with you guys at the end of April saying, watch out for May.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think they picked up five recruits in May, five or six recruits, including – one of the best offensive tackles in the country in Von Brandt, you know, number five offensive tackle in the country. They picked up the linebacker, and there's more to come in June. I actually have seen a lot of people that follow recruiting thinking that Auburn's actually going to have a better June than May. I don't know how that's going to play out. You'd have to get Carlos May, who's a high four-star, the Culpepper kid who plays linebacker, Nash Johnson. I'm really, really high on the receiver from Vegas, Damani. I think it's Goodwin is his last name, but he's 6'4", 215, high three-star. I have gotten to the point, guys, where I throw out the star system. I really do. I look at offer lists now. And I think if guys, you know, when you look at Texas A&M, Texas, you know, some of these schools going after this receiver, some of the schools that went after Von Brent, I look more, and then the kid, too, from Brentwood, Tennessee, the offensive tackle, Brand, I believe is his name. Same thing, big offer list. Auburn's only going to sign 16 or 17 players, so their overall recruiting class is probably going to barely finish in the top 20. But look at average star ranking, and then more than anything else, look at offer list. And I think the same thing with Chapman Jr., the quarterback, who I think is woefully undervalued, and I think as he goes into his senior year and starts to put up, you know, video game numbers, you watch some of the schools that are going to come after him. And so that's what I look for. And I think that you get to 16 or 17 with this class. It's who Auburn wanted. It's Auburn targeted some kids. I think there's some fast risers. And I think they fill positions. And they're starting to grow into this whole, look, Big Cat Weekend used to be the who's who of who's on campus. But, guys, let's be honest. How many guys actually signed with Auburn? At that point, Auburn was always really infatuated with getting all these big names on campus, and they incentivized them to get on campus. But Auburn had a hard time signing. I mean, they went through that little run where they got Perry Thompson and Riddick and that kind of thing. But for the most part, it was just about who could they get on campus and wow with the names they got on campus. Well, who cares if you can't close them? I think the kids that were on campus last weekend were really interested in coming to Auburn, and it's showing with the recruiting success.
And, Daryl, before we let you out of here, wanted to get your thoughts on the basketball, the hardwood. Auburn goes and gets their final piece, you would imagine, the Lithuanian wing, 6'6" to 6'8", depending on where you go and look. But with experience in the EuroLeague and New Zealand. But funny enough, that's not what drives anything in college basketball anymore, as another team from the Southeastern Conference is not necessarily making positive headlines as it stands right now. Will Wade continues to do Will Wade things. I feel like it's the best way to go about it. Your thoughts on what is going on, the comparison with what he's doing to Bediako, and then kind of closing it out on what our topic has been on how Auburn is in a very different, there are comparisons, but how it's a very different set of rules that Auburn is attacking versus what is trying to be done with the NCAA.
Will Wade's going to Will Wade. I mean, RJ Lewis, you know, he had 8 points in an NBA game. I don't care if it was preseason or not. It wasn't G League. It was an NBA game. No way. I think that's he's going to be ruled ineligible. I don't see him ever suiting up for LSU. And then they just got some kid from Cleveland, the Cleveland Cavaliers, that, you know, so he's going to do whatever he can to try to stretch the rules. And I think that he'll probably bat 500 on this. I don't see RJ Lewis being able to play. I love Auburn's roster composition right now. Love it. I think it's one of the – it reminds me a lot of what they did when they had that off year in 2020 and then went out and got Jabari and Kessler and some of those – Katie Johnson and Will Green. And I love this team. I love the Kimball kid, the backup point guard, the backup hybrid guard. I think he's very underrated, and I think he's going to have a very, very important role in this team when Tahad or Overton have to come off the floor. He can spell either one. He can take the place of either one. I love Mantis, pure shooter. I like the bigs, the Bucky kid and the Nagoy kid. I think are defensive, you know, just madmen, and they can still combine, get you points. Freeman, Dowd, I really like the composition of this roster, and I think that they did a good job at filling holes, and I cannot wait to watch this team. I think this is going to be a really good bounce back year. Even if 532 teams weren't allowed in the NCAA tournament, I think Auburn would have gotten into the tournament under the old 68 team, and I think they're going to have a good bounce back year.
And apologies if I overstep in keeping you too long, but you mentioned something I wanted to get your thoughts real quick on.
Yeah.
You mentioned Will Wade possibly going 1-for-2 and getting one of those guys. Jacob and I talked a lot about it yesterday in what the NCAA had talked about after the Charles Bediako situation of this is a win for college athletics. This is a win for college and high school kids that are not now losing spots to professional athletes. Even if Will Wade does go 1-for-2, do you feel like this could be the beginning of the end for what the NCAA is, considering they would be losing their backbone if they even had it? But the applause that we gave for them doing what they did with the Bediako situation, of them basically referring and going right back from that?
Yeah, I think they have to be very, very careful in having a demarcation line and saying, look, getting European players isn't the same as getting NBA players. And anytime they try to muddy the topic and try to cross-reference that is because they know that it's not the same and they're trying to muddy the waters. If the NCAA wants to be around as an institution, they cannot buckle on this. Now, look, you guys have all probably seen the movie We Are Marshall. And I'm not opposed to the NCAA changing a rule that's stupid and makes sense. And remember, after the plane crash, freshmen couldn't participate in college athletics, and the famous scene where, you know, Matthew McConaughey and his assistant coach are going out there, and then they send the president of the school, and they eventually overturn that, and they allow freshmen to play. Great rule. That needed to change. I think the transfer rule, to a certain extent, needed to change because they were so harsh on kids that had mothers dying of cancer. But Justin Fields gets offended, albeit should have, got upset by what was said to him from the stands at a baseball game, and they let him transfer because they're afraid to get sued. I want to see the NCAA make changes, and I don't mind doing things and changing status quo, but it needs to make sense for the student athlete, and it needs to not be because you're afraid. See, anytime you make decisions based out of fear, they end up not being good decisions.
Yep,
when you make decisions based out of benefit is when you can see real change. And the NCAA has gotten too scared because of being afraid of being sued and all that. If they do it purely with integrity and say, this is best for the student athlete, and tighten up some of these NIL stuff and the transfer and letting a kid transfer six times, Just use common sense. You're European. You've never been on a college campus before. You've never been in the G League. You've never been in the NBA. Come on over. Oh, you scored 8 points against the LA Clippers in a preseason NBA game? No. No, you're not. And so just understand why you're making the decision, and I think you'll be okay.
Boom. Great stuff from our guy, Daryl Dapritz, Double D of Locked On Auburn and the Bar, man. It's been a joy to have you this week, as always, and looking forward to many more conversations here on the show as we get into the summer, of course, talking season. We'll dive deep into the rosters and the schedules and things like that, but plug everything. I know we've kept you a little long. Plug it all. Tell people where to find you each and every week, my man.
I enjoy talking with you guys, so it's not keeping me longer at all. Wednesdays and Fridays, Locked On Auburn, we're going to get your podcast on YouTube. And then Sundays as well, 8 o'clock at night, the Barncast. And normally when it's not a holiday or a golf tournament going on, 7:10 a.m. with our good friend Ben Taylor as well. I enjoy being with Ben. So you guys have a great Memorial Day. Enjoy the weekend. Be safe to all your listeners out there. And looking forward to popping back on with you next week.
Same to you, man. Double D, Daryl Dapritz with us here on the phone lines. Imagine playing at a golf tournament. Imagine ditching your show to play in a golf tournament.
It's impressive.
Couldn't be us.
Nope.
We do our job. Mm. We host our show.
Not pointing fingers, but I mean.
I am. Wow, what a loser. Anyway, Double D.
It's okay. We 56 and still lost by 6 strokes. So
still lost.
Guess
by
it
six.
Didn't end up mattering.
Shot a 50. I just don't buy it. They bought it, all right. That's for sure. All right, we'll take a break. Thank you again to Daryl Dapritz for joining us. As always, we got to get to break. We'll come back. It will be a very quick segment, and then we're talking Auburn baseball next.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line in Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
And it is called a strike, baby. That's right.
There it is.
Oh, there's a thunder, too. Oh, there's the rain. How about that?
Yeah, it's bed to bed. Sorry.
Huh?
It's music bed to music bed. That's why the music was still up, because it was still it just...
Oh, I didn't hear it. Talking about intro music to our...
Just go to break. Just
man. Yeah. ABS.
ABS, rain, and music. That's what...
And aww, a home run.
He just went
oh,
deep.
That was the thunder.
Nice. God. Just go to break. Just pop the music up. Get me out.
Halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. If you have thoughts on anything going on in the sports world, but talking Auburn baseball, you can give us a call, 334-321-1390, or you can shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. Thoughts on the game tonight for Auburn baseball as they are slated to take on LSU at 8 o'clock. You can listen to the radio broadcast with Andy Burcham, Brad Law on the Auburn Sports Network here locally. On Wings 94.3, our sister station next door. They'll go on the air at 7:45. And look, Auburn is the better team tonight. I don't think anybody is denying that idea. Auburn is the sixth seed in the tournament. Auburn's going to be a top eight national seed. LSU went 9-21 in SEC play, but LSU's that team that we talked about, like, they get hot for absolutely no reason, and if Jake Marciano has another off night, if the Auburn bats decide not to wake up since LSU has already played a game, right, they'll have the advantage there. But I can't get out of my head the idea that these two teams didn't play in the regular season.
Yeah, it is. It's a weird thought to have, and again, obviously excitement. Auburn hasn't really made a whole lot of noise in this tournament since the century mark flipped over, since 2000, yeah. And won a couple of games, but you feel like, man, this has been the part of the year that becomes a little bit frustrating, and this is something that there shouldn't have to be pressure, and my gosh, there shouldn't be, but the way that all of these analytic departments and all of these graphics and all of these social media pages are making it seem as if, man, Auburn still has to do a little bit more work. What they've already done is good and all, but it's not good enough, yeah, and Auburn needs to continue to keep on winning. And while I don't necessarily disagree, I think that would just be more so just from a confidence standpoint. And funny enough, I think I found what South Auburn found about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's coming down now.
I think we have found it. And you look over to Hoover, and again, do not use us as your weatherman or your radar, but safe to say that the weather that has not affected the first part of Hoover may play a little bit of a factor tomorrow and throughout the weekend. It says it's only 35% today, but it starts late tonight. 90% on Thursday, 95% on Friday, 85% on Saturday, and 80% on Sunday. So do with that what you will.
I mean, at what point do you, in the middle of this tournament, and I think they've done this before, correct me if I'm wrong, eventually you just got to punt. Like, if you get into Saturday and it's like, we haven't even played the quarterfinal games, like, it's, at that point you got to punt on a tournament that, again, doesn't really matter.
Well, it's that, and, I mean, the teams are hoping you get to that point because, man, the SEC, you don't want to screw over your own conference. Yes, you want to crown a champion, but if the worst case scenario is you have to call Georgia the champion or whatever the case may be.
Or just don't have one.
Or again, just don't have it at all, because, man, I tell you what, if Auburn was playing for a championship in Hoover on Tuesday afternoon, I'd be kind of upset. as would a lot of these other teams, because, man, I don't want to have to use arms on Tuesday if I'm going to have to play on Thursday. I don't want to have to worry about that. Neither team playing in that, even in the semifinals, wouldn't want to have to worry about something like that. And so, obviously, we'll get there. We'll get there when we get there. Name the movie. Trip? No. The Incredibles.
I do like that movie. I don't think I can quote it like that, though.
I can't either. That's the one, about the one line that I have.
The only line I know from that is, "Honey, where is my super suit?"
That's a solid one in there as well.
Yeah. That's all I got.
But yeah, no, we'll get there when we get there. And that's the same way with weather. We'll also get there when we get there in terms of when Auburn is playing tonight. Again, the next game was scheduled for 4:30. We're in the home half of the eighth right now. Florida up 8-3. But of course, this inning started at like 3:25, and Florida's put up a couple more runs, and 3-0, new pitchers, a couple new arms on the mound. Florida trying to, a 3-run homer would end this and put you right back on schedule. How wild would that? No, it wouldn't. That would make it 11-3. Apologies. Math. But no, I'm really looking forward to tonight. I'm interested on what the strategy is going to look like in terms of Marciano. I believe Butch Thompson, don't quote me on this, but had topics of questions that he answered and saying that the pitch count would be a little bit limited for Marciano. And so interested if that'll be a Cormier or if that'll be somebody else. And I think also the lead or the deficit depends on the arms that you go to, because despite it not being the most important thing, Auburn – again, tying this all back, Auburn unfortunately does not want to go one and done, just based off of the fear of what could happen, based off of the people who have been quite loud in saying that Auburn still has work to do.
And in that case, too, you would sit around for another week and wait to play baseball if you go one and done because of when the regional would start.
Which is, yes, that brings even more of, okay, it's nice to get your arms healthy. Yet something that I talked about with you off air in terms of Enterprise and then Central, you played that what, Monday, Tuesday, and then Friday, Saturday, rather than it being a full week of, yes, the arms are one thing, but you want to talk about rallying. Man, confidence rolls through the batting lineup and hits roll through the batting lineup. And so I think that's a little bit of the fear sometimes when you face a team like LSU who is playing with house money, understanding that if they look up after nine innings and the scoreboard is not in favor of them, their season's over.
Yeah.
So they're going to play with everything, trying to continue their season, try to get a couple more wins.
For a team like Auburn, whose offense is very hit or miss, taking a week off.
Is that Tripp's statistics?
They either hit it or they don't,
yeah,
according to Trip Upton. for an Auburn team and their offense being wishy-washy, okay, taking a week off is not
a rain punch?
Good. That is pretty good. That's not good. That's not what you want. And so my hope for tonight's game, Auburn and LSU, again, scheduled for an 8 o'clock start. We hope that that remains, but we really don't know. I would like to see Auburn just hit their way through this one. Just even if Marciano is on a pitch count, even if he doesn't have his best stuff and he goes out there and gives you five complete or 4 2/3 and he has a 70 pitch count and gives up five hits, four runs, whatever, I would like to see Auburn just hit their way through it, outscore LSU, and it's not have to worry about pitchers just shutting it down and, oh, Marciano picks up his eighth strikeout. It would be cool, but I would rather it just be, man, let's just get on. Let's just get hits. Let's just score, and we'll worry about the rest of the tournament at that point. And if you can win a game or two against a Texas A&M or a Texas or an Arkansas or whatever the case may be, fine. Just win this game tonight and do so offensively to build that confidence. 1-9 in the batting order. I'm curious to see what that lineup looks like tonight against this LSU team. And I think that would pretty much satisfy all parties involved.
At worst, that would make it to, okay, that is what it is. This is basically a couple of years ago, game one in Nashville, where the conversation started of, does Auburn even deserve to be the number one overall seed? They've lost three of their last four.
Yeah.
It's kind of where Auburn is at. And the fear really going into Saturday was, holy cow, if you're on a five-game losing streak, that is when some of the concerns hit. Whether that's fair or not, I still don't think so. But we have such a recency bias focus. And again, maybe these are just some of the voices on social media and the accounts that use this stuff for clicks and engagement, of having much more of a nearsighted focus than a full season or a farsighted focus, just in terms of the full body of work, which we are hoping that the selection committee goes ahead and looks at, because that then favors Auburn heavily more than what a lot of these sites are saying, where the Auburn Tigers are projected anywhere from, I mean, fifth to seventh is kind of where they're projected. And fifth feels like a good spot to be. But again, if Auburn could get a win tonight, if they could get a win tomorrow and get to the point of, okay, maybe they're back in that top four conversation, I think that would put a lot to bed in terms of, okay, is this Auburn team where they need to be going into the regionals?
Well, D1 Baseball, or I guess the SEC Network, put up a graphic from D1 Baseball. Their latest projections had Auburn as the 7 seed, matched up with Florida.
With Florida.
Team playing right
At
now.
At first you said Kansas, and I was like, please.
I know, I read
the
graphic
give
wrong.
That one to me.
I read the graphic wrong.
But
Kansas was the 15 seed, matched up with whoever that 2 seed was.
With
I forget
Tech.
Who it was. Is that who it was?
Yeah.
So, Auburn and Florida in a super would... Oh, that would just be incredible. I would be so
It'd
nervous.
It'd be fun, but that's one of those. We talk all about the SEC Super Regional.
I don't want to be an SEC team, man.
Give me
I don't
anybody
want to.
But that's,
I don't want to. I mean,
give me UCLA in a Super Regional before you get to that point.
Dude, send us to Los Angeles. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, if at that point, like, I highly doubt that UCLA's home atmosphere for a Super Regional is going to be anything crazy. The worst part about it is having to fly across the country and be in Los Angeles for a week. Like, that's the worst part about that. UCLA is good, not great, and that's not going to be an Auburn or a Florida or a Texas A&M type of home atmosphere. It's just not going to be. And so, God, I don't know if I can handle the stress of an Auburn, Florida Super Regional at Plainsman Park. That'd be a hell of a weekend.
For a team that has quickly turned it on, and you talk about playing really good baseball at the right time. I mean, what they did to end the regular season, and then a win like this over Vanderbilt and a possible run in the SEC, that would be very, very scary. But the Tigers and the Tigers tonight, and I guess while we have a minute, I brought it to your attention and wanted to talk a little bit about this in terms of the ABS kind of having a lot of what we've talked about over the past couple of days. Did anybody else see what happened last night? And again, I know I was able to talk with you about it, but the ABS moment on a 3-ball, 1-strike count, runner on first base, 1 out. Fastball was thrown, and it was called a ball. So because of that, the runner at first jogged down to second because it was 4. No need for the catcher to throw down. Well, it challenged it, and the pitch was called a strike, which made it 3-2. And so all the coaches, all the umpires kind of stood around and was like, oh, what do we do with the runner that's now on second base? And they ultimately said that it was a live ball. Although it was called a ball, which basically makes the play dead because it would be then runners on first and second, the catcher challenged it, and it was a called strike after the review. But because that happened after, they basically ruled it as to be a live ball, and the runner was able to
steal.
Walk his way and steal second base.
That is
the concern. That is the frustration that I think ABS brings, because it's now going to make it to where, okay, I don't care where it is, you better throw the ball down. Even if it's 4, you better not take a chance. You better throw it down and not risk anything like this. Because again, both coaches and all the umpires kind of sat there and were like, oh crap, this is the first time that this has worked its way into fruition in this tournament. And I think that is one of the concerns of ABS. And again, that I guess would eliminate it if we go to your method of, okay, this is every single pitch, but still makes stealing on 3-1 a little bit interesting, because you can't make it to where if you challenge, it's automatically a dead ball, because, oh, I'm just going to challenge every single time a runner gets a really good jump and is going to steal second base, because then there's even more gray area. And so a really interesting situation on that side of things. But funny enough that it happened in the game that we were watching, and Auburn was watching. Their entire team was out watching the LSU-Oklahoma game, all sharing Dippin' Dots in the stadium last night, which was really, really fun. But just wanted to bring that up because I think that's a really weird topic.
Well, it goes back to when this news broke, a couple of weeks ago, that they were going to be testing out the ABS system in the SEC tournament. And we were having conversations and debates about if that was the best time to use it or whether it was in non-con play or just the start of the season or whatever. And it's like, I don't know how nobody thought of that situation because surely Major League Baseball ran into that at some point. But if there's a time for it to happen, it's on the first day of the SEC tournament. And who knows if that even, came to fruition. I don't know if that dude came around to score or whatever. I don't know. But if there's a time for it to happen, that would be it. But yeah, I think the fix to that would be just have ABS calling balls and strikes all the time. And then there's no strategy of, well, I know I got rung up, but let me tap my helmet really quick and hurry, go, scurry, get down. So I think that would fix it.
What would be even worse is if it was ball four or whatever the case was, but the catcher challenged it but still was able to get the runner out at first. And it was like, oh, I only took off because it was ball four. I should be able to get rewarded first base back.
What about this, Christian? I just thought of this, and maybe this doesn't – I'm thinking of this on the fly. What about like a drop third? Or a passed ball or a wild pitch.
Where the runner or the batter reaches?
Yes. Yeah. Where like the batter 3-1, reaches.
3-1 checks his swing, or 3-1 it's called a ball, gets to the backstop because of, say, a pitch mix.
Yeah.
Or a mix-up.
Yeah.
He makes first, but then the catcher challenges it and says that it was actually a called strike. He's got to make his way back to first.
But if the ball gets past him, it's a live ball, right? No matter what.
So it would be everybody else.
As long as it's not ending the inning, right? I don't know. Maybe just kind of thinking through different scenarios like that where a live ball could be in play, the count could be in question, and somebody, like that could get funky to where it's like, okay, no matter what, you instantly know whether that was a ball or a strike. You know what I mean? And, maybe that's where the home plate umpire could still be in play, because in that scenario, the catcher, again, passed ball, wild pitch, whatever, the catcher is going off of whether the umpire rings him up or not. He hears it. You can't expect the catcher to look up at the video board and then go after the baseball in this fake scenario that we're playing out. Maybe the home plate umpire calls it based off of the scoreboard to where the catcher can still react in that situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Again, just really weird.
Some of those funky things that aren't going to happen often.
Right. But a play like that brings up all of those conversations, all of those possibilities of, okay, well, he was able to walk his way and steal second. What happens if they threw down just in case and he was out? Does it all of a sudden then you draw the argument of, well, I only ran from first to second because of a walk. Should I not be able to go back to first because I wasn't stealing on the play? So a really weird situation last night in LSU's win over Oklahoma. Real quick, looking at this LSU team, Tripp did some research for us, and it's a really, really hit-and-miss team. And funny enough, we talk about the other side of the Tigers in LSU. They're top 20 nationally in walks. They're also top 25 in home runs. They're middle of the SEC in batting average. They hit .284, a .403 on base percentage. They are dead last in ERA. So they score a lot of runs. They give up a lot of runs. They are 15th in the SEC in walks and hits allowed per inning. And they're also dead last in walks per nine. But they're somehow the top strikeout team in the country based off of per nines.
In the conference.
And so just going, yes, in the conference. But it just goes to show when things are working really, really well for this LSU team, you get wins. Unfortunately for them, they have been staggering and have not really been able to put up good weekends. This is their first win in seven games after getting swept by Georgia and Florida, I believe, to end the regular season. And so a team that has a little bit rolling their way, Auburn's got to find a way to stop it. Yeah. That starts with Marciano tonight.
Yep, it does. That's what makes a team like this so dangerous in a tournament format. All you got to do is get hot. So,
Florida took it over Vanderbilt 8-3.
Okay. I thought
which makes it to where a 4:30 start.
Yeah, probably not. Do they force an hour in between each game? Is that what they mandatory? Like,
even if it is an hour, that's still not terrible. But if it's 35-40 minutes, you are right on track.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what they say. We'll give you an update from Hoover in just a moment. Yeah, Florida takes it over Vanderbilt. One more game in between Tennessee, Arkansas should be incredible later on today. And then Auburn and LSU supposed to play tonight. We'll wrap it up and tell you about it right after this.
This is Amber from Amber and Ian. You're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. We've talked a ton of baseball and some football in there. Talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Talked to Daryl Daprich of for Double D Wednesday of Auburn, of Locked On Auburn and the Barn. And just talked a little Auburn and LSU. As of right now, they're still on pace to play at 8 o'clock tonight in Hoover, if that's the case, or if they do play tonight at all, you can listen to the radio broadcast, Andy Burch and Brad Law, on the call on our sister station next door on Wings 94.3.
Good thing is that Tennessee and Arkansas are not high-powered offenses. They don't score a lot of runs, and
right. So thankfully
that will be a 2-1 game that takes an hour and 45 minutes, and you're good to go. It will not be a 14-11 halftime type of score at Hoover.
Yeah. Well, this is the last time that I'll be on the show for a while because I'm out of town tomorrow and Friday calling baseball. There's a World Friday I could call in for a segment and recap game one and preview game two and three if necessary. I won't play until four on Friday, I don't think. So there's a world I could do that and make that possible. But tomorrow I'm out to go to Oxford for Auburn High Baseball State Championship Series, Tigers and the Hewitt Trustville Huskies. So it'll be Christian and Tripp here tomorrow.
Might have you for a segment, though, recapping Auburn baseball, as you mentioned. I'm talking a little bit of Auburn High. A full recap tomorrow, or a full preview.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. Tomorrow's a little tighter. We play at 2 tomorrow, so got to travel and do a bunch of things. So tomorrow's up in the air, Friday for sure, and then all next week I'm out on vacay. So really look, if I make it. if I make it there, we'll see. So, yes, again, Auburn baseball tonight against LSU, Wings 94-3 here locally in Auburn and Opelika. Tomorrow's Thursday, so Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, as long as Auburn's not playing for whatever crazy reason tomorrow afternoon at 2:30.
Yeah.
And then Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. So should be a good show tomorrow, 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.